Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned in to Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian Show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima and Simran.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
Are you okay, Halima?
Not really. My whole body is broke up and I need to go to the gym after this. God.
Anyway, speaking of bodies being broke up, Kim K at the Met Gala.
Okay. My question is, how, first of all, and my second question is, why the cardigan? Why was she gripping onto it like it was a child? And number three, my third question is, to you guys, how much of what she wore deserves a commentary of, like, your damaging the image for young girls and blah, blah, blah? Like, why is she still responsible? Like, I know the damage that the Kardashian celebrityhood has done for, like, body image and, like, you know, body standards for females and young girls. But, you know, how much now does Kim K having no waist and a dress invite the conversation of, like, you're damaging self-image for young impressionable people and blah, blah, blah? Like, are we still on that? Or, like, I don't know. I don't know what my opinion is on it. So I'm asking you guys.
Because I saw it, obviously, and I don't think anyone can really answer the first question, how. Like, it's just like...
Did she remove ribs?
Because
But then I know, like, obviously they probably put the cardigan on to make her shoulders look bigger.
The cardigan was bobbly as well, man.
Yeah. But, like, okay, no doubt the cardigan's probably, like, $5,000. But, like, surely they would have had, like, a nice shawl or something that would work better.
Yeah, it's weird.
And also, like, when you look at her body, yeah, like, whatever she's done to get to that, it's obviously work, like, it's external work, right? Because that is not a, I mean, okay, there are, I guess, maybe some women who do look like that, but just generally that is not, and we've seen her before, that's not how she looks. That is not, like, a normal proportions.
Yeah, and it's not something that's attainable by just eating healthy and exercise, work, strength training, example. It's, like, that is, unless you are actually built like that, which, like you said, I doubt a lot of people are, that's, like, it's ridiculous. I think also, obviously, it's really made more obvious by the fact that it's not just that she is really skinny and therefore has a skinny waist, it's the fact that she's got the skinny waist and then the hourglass figure, like, going out either side. But going back to what you were saying, Simran, I did get a sense of that, like, in that I saw it and I was like, what is this? Like, this is that's just too, it's too far. Like, but then it's
saw,
like,
the comments, and all the comments are like, Kim, what are you doing? You're ruining this for young people and impressionable people and blah, blah, blah. And I just feel like, surely the Kardashians are no longer the spokespeople of, like, what we think an ideal body should look like. I think we're past that as a society. Like, I know that, like, thick has been in, then skinny's been in, and body types go round in trends, which is an inherently bad idea in itself. But from what extent do we still hold the Kardashians as the spokespeople for what a body should look like? And does Kim K having a waist that's that big mean that a 13-year-old girl is going to be like, I need my waist to be that big?
I think that's always going to be the case. I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah. That's just the nature of celebrity culture, even though, like, the Kardashians, for example, are someone that are a group of people that more or less people know they look like this because of tons and tons of, like, surgery and work and stuff like that. They are still extremely impactful and they are still taste makers. Like, regardless of what people might think about them individually, they are very much taste makers. So that's why I say, like, and just kind of the nature of celebrity status and celebrity culture, there will always be, I guess, to an extent, like, in that role model position, or, like, people will always look, young girls will always look up to them.
I do think, like, age-wise, us guys got quite lucky. We did surpass that kind of, like, be a bit slightly less impressionable. We still are, don't get me wrong. But, like, I feel like a lot of people my age and older don't really look up to those people. And, like, I have to look like Kylie Jenner, Kim Kardashian, whatever. Like, whereas I think you see it a lot in, like, people that are younger than us, like teenagers now.
But also, like, body trends changed. So I would say when we were teenagers, we kind of went through that whole... When I was
I remember the weird things that I wanted to look like when I was 12 years old. I remember the whole fad over thigh gaps and how you weren't attractive if your thigh is touched.
That was when we were, like, really young, but then we went through, like, there was that kind of body trend of being, like, thick, like, slim, thick, having big back and all of that kind of stuff. And now they're saying that skinny is, like, making a comeback, aren't they?
But then everyone was like, the Kardashians removed their BBLs, but Kylie definitely had a rather large behind at the Met Gala, and so did Kim. and they still had that body shape.
Oh, it's just weird, isn't it?
So I don't know, like, what in. And also, like, how are we now going to say that thick was in, now skinny's in, and now everyone's gone and got BBLs? So it's like, now what? We have to just, everyone has to reverse their BBLs.
It's just constantly changing.
But, like, the idea of body types being trendy is obviously a really, really flawed, messed up idea. And we don't need to, like, to go any further into that. That just is a fact, right? But, yeah, I think my question was, after looking at some of the comments, is, like, I would like to think, as a society, we've bypassed looking at people like Kim Kardashian for how we should look as people. Not because she looks a certain way, but because we should just want to look away ourselves and have our own ideas of what we want to look like and not have to look to other people for that inspiration.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I had a similar thing, similar of that. I did myself. I saw how she looked and I was like, oh, this is a bit like can't she breathe? Like, this is a bit ridiculous. But then I saw some of the comments and they were directly saying, Kim K, you have set back the feminist movement by however many years and like whatever.
You
and
said that.
Like people online have saying that. I'm just like, I don't know if that's a fair statement to make.
Women for centuries have been strapped into like unreasonably tight corsets to have that look, and then they put all those layers on their hips to make them look so large. Like, that has always been a thing where like women have convoluted their body into God knows what position to look a certain way, right? That's that's not new. That's not been founded by Kim Kardashian. So to say that she's set back feminism, I think, is really strong. And it's just, if Kim Kardashian, as one single human being, is the spokesperson for your idea of feminism, you need to branch that out a little bit.
Yeah. No, I think it's
both. And also, she's just like a... They are... I think that she's... Within the industry, they are obviously extremely, extremely impactful when it comes to trend making. But it's not just the Kardashians. Like, this, this is the nature of what celebrity culture is. Like, people are always going to look up to them. They're always going to be the ones to set that. They are the kind of, like, ultimate influencers, essentially. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, I think the Kardashians will probably get kind of greater scrutiny just because they are kind of extremely popular, especially in the realm of, like, fashion and beauty and things like that. But just in general, I think it's just a wider comment on, like, celebrity culture at large.
Yeah. You know? No, I agree.
It's not even just in terms of, like, body types. It's everything. Like, it's this kind of... I think celebrity culture in general should just be demolished, whether it's, like, having parasocial relationships with them, whether it's kind of looking to them as role models for, like, the attainment of wealth, you know, going to the point of defending billionaires. Just everything to do with celebrity culture, I think, should just be gone.
On that note, I mean, on a positive spin on this as well, we've seen a lot of South Asian celebrities and South Asian designers being celebrated at the Met Gala this year. I think Aliaba and her, like, 23-foot-long trail, like, that got a lot of attention. Mona Patel, who I've not actually heard of before.
I had not heard of this woman, but she's stunning.
Yeah,
her dress was stunning.
Butterfly dress is really cool. Sabio Sachi himself was there, and he was the first South Asian designer to walk the red carpet at the Met Gala. So lots of big
moments. This year was the first year.
I think, like, this is the first time that a South Asian designer has ever walked the red carpet.
Okay, so I have many things to say about this, and I'm not gonna lie, it's not positive.
No, let me just get that out of the way, so there's a little, like, we can get the positive in and then hand it over to you. There we go.
You know what it is? It's like everyone is raving and they're like, oh my god, Aliaba and, you know, Sabio Sachi, like, they're putting South Asian culture and South Asian designs and fashion on, like, this global stage and blah 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 blah. I'm thinking, what? Like, Sabio Sachi needed Met validation. Like, I get that obviously the Met Gala is kind of seen like this beacon of, like, fashion and creativity, and I also get that America are kind of like, they have this global cultural hegemony where they are kind of like the world leaders in I guess in as much of a global culture as we have. But actually, that has never made any sense to me, because statistically speaking, like, there's way more people in, like, the Indian subcontinent, and the influence of, like, you know, the culture of the Indian subcontinent is actually far more expansive than, like, somewhere like Hollywood, for example. Like, it's this conversation I always have with people about, like, Shah Rukh Khan, right? So, obviously, me and my family were, like, massive Shah Rukh Khan fans. And, like, people always get gassed when he's seen in, like, an American show or, like, an American just media or whatever. And I'm like, do you not actually understand how famous this man is? Like, he doesn't need American validation. Like, the entire subcontinent, like, intermittently throughout the entire continent of Africa, like, I, like, that this man is probably, actually, statistically speaking, one of the most famous people in the world. Like, but then you lot are getting gassed because, you know, he's, like, on an American talk show. And it's kind of, like, a very similar thing where people are like, oh, my God, like, Sabyasachi Sachi is getting, like, global recognition and he's being put on a global stage. I'm like, do you know who you're talking about? Mm. Like, do you not know who you're talking about, that the mark for his success is now that he's at the Met Gala? This man been successful. This man been, you know, trend-making. Like, how much of... And this is kind of maybe just an ode to Sabyasachi, because he is one of my favorite. He has been one of my favorite designers, like, from time. May or may not have anything to do with the fact that he's Bengali, but, like, this man, like, I can't even tell you how much of, like, South Asian couture wear or, like, bridal wear is, like, deeply influenced by just Sabyasachi himself. And statistically speaking, do you know how many we are in number? Why is the mark now that he's of his success now that he's, you know, Ali Abad wore him at the Met, or that he's been seen at the Met? I don't like that.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think as well, there's a difference between, say, South Asian celebrities or people wearing South Asian designers going on the Met and just being celebrated for the fact that it's a nice outfit. There's a difference between that and people celebrating, oh, South Asian representation.
We're finally getting seen.
Like, yeah, like, there's a difference.
And it's just, and I think it really goes back to this deeper thing of, like, if your kind of, like, validation and your mark of, your meter for success is always going to be on, like, it's always going to rely on Western validation, you're always going to be one step behind. You will always be one step behind. Where actually what you need to focus is your own kind of spheres of culture. You know, like, get your validation from there, not from the Met.
Any favourite looks, Simran, in general?
Tyler.
Yeah, the sound dress.
No, again, like, it's just one of those dodgy ones with theme that, like, I feel like some people just don't even hear about the theme. Bad Bunny looked cool. I'm trying to think who else really stood out. Kendall looked good. Don't know if it really was on theme, but she looked good.
Yeah, I agree. I think Kendall's was cool.
I don't think there was that many stand out.
No.
Obviously, Doja Cat came in the towel.
You know who actually looked really good? Mindy Kaling.
Like, was she wearing pink or purple or something?
Like, mauve-y kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it was like a flower. Yeah. Mm. It was really nice.
And Bika Mod was there.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I liked to dress them.
And I wasn't sure, like, about the outfit, but I'm just happy cool she was there. Yeah.
That being said, I do think, and a lot of people have pointed this out, but I do think there's a lot to be said about the fact that at the same point that the Met Gala was going on over in Israel-Palestine, Israel decided to launch their latest offensive into Rafah, which is currently where over 1 million displaced Palestinians are.
Yeah, this is what I wanted to say, but, like, I wanted you guys to have your, like, to enjoy the conversation about it. Exactly. But I was like, I didn't enjoy a single part of any of that. Like, I couldn't. Like, it just seems so dystopian. And, like, a lot of people are making parallels with, like, the Hunger Games, which actually is, like, very quite accurate, where you have kind of, like, one demographic of people, like, in these kind of obscene, you know, in this gathering of, like, obscene displays of wealth. And the thing is, and then you have like another demographic of people who are being, who are in an ongoing, what is it, 7-8 months? I think this is the eighth month now, going on to the eighth month.
Yeah, going into the eighth month, yeah.
Going of like indiscriminate just genocide. And the thing is that like some people might be like, oh, well, you know, those two things can, like, existence is complex and those two things can kind of exist at the same time. They're actually extremely related because obviously the Met is kind of like a foundation of like American culture, you know, American fashion culture, and America are kind of arguably the biggest kind of allies in Israel's enactment of this genocide. So to be able to kind of separate the two, it just logistically and logically just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, they are inherently connected, you know, like the perpetrator is there throwing these, like, as I say, lavish gatherings where people are just displaying all their wealth. And then at the same time, they are brutalizing and victimizing an entire demographic of people.
And I don't know whether there's really anything that we can say. In regards to also this latest development in Palestine.
I was thinking about this. Obviously, you know, when we come to record the show, like, we're going to have to talk about this. And then I just sat there and I thought, well, what is there to say? I feel like at this point, we've spoken so much and we've covered so much. And we've done our best, like, as a show and a platform to make people understand if they don't. But beyond a certain point, like, once you reach a certain point in all of this, there's not much more intellectualizing you can do other than just objectively state the facts of, like, the news. Other than to objectively relay the news, there is not much more intellectualizing or debate or discussion you can really be had on this.
Yeah. I think, just like I said, like, it's important that even if we feel like we can't necessarily add anything more constructive to the conversation, that we just keep the conversation going in the sense that like, I think the current, like, trend at the moment is all eyes on Rafa, which is obviously, like, I think was also in regards to the Met Gala, because obviously, again, it's this idea of everyone, like, around the Western side of the globe was, like, looking towards this one event, when at the same time, like, major atrocities are being carried out there. But I think, yeah, it's just really important, because, again, like, this is, like, if this continues, and, like, at the extent that it is, then I'm not sure what more of Palestine there is left to actually, like, go to. Like, again, like, it's like over 1 million people trapped in this, the bottom bit of Palestine. There's nowhere for them to go. Like, it, aside from it speaking, like, in terms of speaking, like, really scary statistics in terms of how much of Palestine might be destroyed, it's also in regards to the actual Palestinians themselves.
Yeah, I think that people are kind of really, we say all the time on the show, like, you think kind of they've reached the extent of their depravity, or like it can't get any worse than it is, and then they really just prove you wrong. I think the reason why Rafah is, like, so, you know, the bombing of Rafah right now, or the bombardment of Rafah right now is so scary, is because it was kind of like an implicit understanding that this was supposed to be like a safe space, if ever there could be one, in a genocide like this. But there was this kind of implicit understanding that those who were willing and ready to just uproot their entire lives, that is where they would go. And now that this has, you know, is being met as like an Israeli target, it's kind of like there literally is nowhere else to go. It's either you leave or you die. But even leaving, like, where, you know, like, yeah, throw them into the desert, you know. I think when you create a situation like this where even the last safe space is now being bombarded, it really hammers home the idea that this is an extermination. Like, this whole time we've been seeing it kind of, you know, get progressively worse and worse and worse. And yet there was always kind of, Rafah, as I say, was always still the safe space. And now the fact that they've encroached on this, it is like, okay, they're really trying to just eliminate absolutely everything and everyone here.
Thoughts with everyone on the ground there and anyone with family who is affected by this at the moment. to finish on a relatively positive note, I have got an interview coming up with Vijay the Music Man and his latest album, Mind Altering Substance, so stay tuned for that. But I wanted to talk about a clip that's gone viral this week, which, you know what, it probably fits best into the Bad Vibes Island segment, but it's not Bad Vibes. It's actually it's Good Vibes Island.
It's Funny Vibes Island. Yeah. Guys, apparently it's fake.
Well, I did think, I don't know, it's been going, it did go on for 2 minutes. For those who don't know what we're talking about, basically, there's a clip that's gone viral this week of a woman who, I think she says that she's in like a council flat or something. And so she's got like this like small patio garden bit with like spikes on her fences and whatever. But somehow this masked intruder has managed to break his way into her garden and is attempting to steal her bike. However, he's really struggling to actually steal the bike. She proceeds to get like a broom and is just constantly prodding him and like literally roasting him whilst he's like doing this. He whips out
funny.
He literally whips out a full on like blade multiple times and
she does not flinch.
Yeah, she's just like, okay. She backs off for like 2 seconds and then proceeds to go about prodding him, which I'm not saying that's what you should do, but like it takes some nerve to like actually do that.
If that video is like real, and that woman is my absolute hero. It is so funny. People say like, how are British people real? Like, this seems like a script of what someone would write of what British people are like, and yet it's just so quintessentially British. Like, she's literally there, and it's a 2 minute clip that's been put out, and she's got this broom, and this guy is like, you know, he's masked. He's trying to get this bike over the fence, and she's just poking him with the broom, and she's like, and she's just taking the mick. Yeah. Like, she's fully just taking the mick out of him. And it's so funny because he's swearing at her, and he's like obviously being very aggressive. And she's just not backing down, even after the blade. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it probably is real. I just find it so funny. I just find it so
weird
funny.
Weird video to fake, though, yeah. If it's fake. Video to fake.
Yeah. Like, but it's just
there are some people like that. Like, you see some people are, like, in those situations.
But, like, that's totally feasible if it's real, too.
Yeah.
And it's like, it took like a full like 30 seconds to get the knife out of his pocket.
No, it was like twice. He got out at the beginning and then she was roasting him for another like minute and then he got out again. It's just...
Yeah, and he's like, and he's like, oh, this is how I make money or whatever. And he's like, we're poor. And she's like, we're all poor, you bloody idiot. We're in a council estate. It's so funny.
And when he's trying to climb the wall and she's like poking him in the bum with the broom.
It's just like it is so quintessentially British, where it's like it's like such a pathetic attempt at a burglary. But you got to laugh.
And he like kicks the plant pot over at her, like he's like throwing his toys out the front.
I mean, I think even if it is fake, it's still funny to watch. Obviously not advocating for burglary, use of knives, or for actually confronting people with a knife. I would say that if you are confronted with a knife, it is best to probably back down. If you haven't seen that clip, I fully suggest going and watching it.
I was thinking, you know how like there's so many like British clips, like the guy putting his whisk in the mouth, like you won Jay and take the money, like flipping fish and a rice cake. There's so many. I saw your grandma passed away. Yeah. What's like a recent one that's come out in like the last 5 years?
You don't realize until it's got that like nostalgic element, do you?
I'm trying to think, like, what's actually come out? Oh, I'll tell you one. I don't even know if it's 5 years, but you know Boris Johnson, like the new blue.
I know gospel. One. Again, it's to do with the, what's it called? Like politics and that. I think it was when they were announcing Rishi Sunak or Liz Truss as, like, the new Prime Minister. And it's like, after weeks of waiting, finally we know. Oh. And she just starts singing and it's like, it just sounds so weird.
Oh my God. I would say, do you know what I think that why there's not been anything? Is because there's nothing to laugh at anymore in this country.
Clearly, Simran, there is. If you look hard enough, if you look on the council estates, then there is
but
something.
Also, isn't it funny that they're all political because our politics is just a joke right now?
Yeah.
You got to laugh or you'll cry.
That's true. That's something that's going down.
Like the lettuce thing was honestly iconic.
It was.
Deary me.
Imagine having to explain to someone that British people basically got a lettuce to see, live streamed a lettuce to see if it would outlive their prime minister. And it did. And it did.
And it did.
Yeah.
That's the worst part.
I still find it so funny that she managed to be the prime minister for when the queen died. Like, the queen having been, like, the reigning monarch for, like, the best part of a century, and she manages to be the prime minister for when that happens.
That is
for, like...
so... that is just cherry on top.
Right. Right. Positive vibes to round things off. Thank you, everyone, that has tuned in today.
Bye,
like I said, stay tuned, because I've got an interview with VJ the Music Man. But, yeah, we will see you next week.
Boy.
Yes, guys, what's good? You tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gerns, and I'm here with VJ the Music Man. How are you doing?
Doing well, how about you?
Good, thanks. We're just discussing, as we're recording this, it's Monday evening, and the Met Gala is in full swing. So, excited to see what people turn out with there. I mean, that's maybe a little bit of an interesting question to start with. Obviously, we've said that the whole theme is like reawakening of fashion and stuff. So if you were to be attending, what kind of vibe? And you had unlimited financial resources and whatever, what would you like put together?
Well, Sleeping Beauty is a huge, like, or reawakening is like a huge, huge, like, it gives you like a range of things to work with. I think I would love to bring kind of like the regal Indian culture, but play it into like nightwear. Maybe like some sort of a playoff of what I think Rihanna did a few years ago with her huge robe, but something that's more of like almost like a cape like kind of texture with like more of like a lacy, like body tight kind of feel for like the actual like suit. But then I would love to do kind of like that Lady Gaga style reveal where I know she did like 4 or 5 different outfits, but definitely something very culture heavy.
Yeah, I knew that you wouldn't disappoint with that. Getting back to the main point of today, thank you for taking the time to speak to me. Obviously, the main reason why we're doing this interview is because you've just released your latest album, Mind Altering Substance. So we'll get on to talking about that in a bit. But first of all, do you want to just tell us a little bit about who is VJ the Music Man?
Absolutely. VJ the Music Man, I am a 25-year-old queer Indian-American singer-songwriter based out of North Carolina. I have just put out my 4th album, but I love to dabble in pop, R&B, and hip-hop genres. I always try to include a little bit of like my Indian cultural element in terms of my vocal training in the background of the music that I create, but I try my best not to subscribe to just one genre or box myself in. I'm always looking to evolve and grow, and yeah, my 4th album, Mind Altering Substance, just dropped Friday, May 3rd, and is available to stream everywhere now.
I mean, that is something that I noticed as well. I haven't had a chance to go back and listen to your previous discography, but one thing that I did notice was you've been very like consistent since like the 2020s. It's pretty much every year that you've been putting out like a massive body of work, which I think is quite admirable.
Thank you.
Like, how did that come about?
So if you can believe it, there were about 3 or 4 projects prior to my first album, Escape the Retrograde, that came out in 2020. So there's 3 or 4 projects of just unreleased music that was sitting on my laptop, just because I had been creating and creating solo music since about 2018, which is just 2 years prior. But again, even during that period of time, even though I wasn't releasing anything, I was always writing, because writing has always served as like a form of journaling for me, being introspective. I write from a very like autobiographical perspective. So I'm just writing what I know about and what I'm going through. So the intent is never to create something that's going to be relatable to the masses. It's really just to get my thoughts on pen and paper. But I've always been so, remarkably taken aback by audience response to something that I thought was so personal and just something that related to me. It's always just one of those things where you're like, okay, here's yet another thing that is not an original thought or idea. This is something that all human beings kind of go through. And I think because I'm writing from such a personal and kind of journaling sort of place, making an album 2020, 2021, 2023, 2024, it sounds like a lot, and it definitely has been. But for me, it's literally just getting my thoughts out on pen and paper and just continuing to live my life.
And I imagine that's something that kind of comes naturally to you, because I was like reading into a couple of interviews you've done previously, and so you're like into like psychiatry and stuff, mm-hmm. right? That is what you do outside of music. So I imagine that kind of goes hand in hand with this idea of getting your thoughts out and processing them and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think like one of the like foundations of like therapy in general is journaling. And I think that you know, that's been what's helped me so much as a person. And to, again, like I said, find a way to almost allow my music to be something that can heal people in its own way, is kind of my newfound purpose when it comes to what I'd like to do musically. I love hearing from friends, family, or random strangers that this song that I may have written for the intent of partying or an absolutely different circumstance helped the person get through the day. Like, I think that's just a beautiful concept that words can have that much meaning.
And I mean, as well, like I said, I haven't had a chance to listen to them, but it's my understanding that your previous three bodies of work do come together as sort of a trilogy.
Yeah.
So this new project, Mind Altering Substance, is that sort of like a move away from maybe a previous sound that embodied those three projects?
So I think that's a great question. The three albums before are interconnected in terms of the story that they were telling, almost like the evolution of this person, this artist, this idea of EJ the Music Man, and this alter ego, the Mad Hatter, kind of clashing together to form that alliance between like security in your identity when it comes to sexuality, your culture, your ethnicity, and who I am as an artist. This album is a lot more about like what it's like to take that security and now give it to another person in a relationship. So I would say this album of work definitely, or body of work, definitely steps away from what the trilogy was. You can hear elements of different albums that I've done before in this project, but the feedback I've gotten thus far is that it's a much, much, much more elevated sound. It steps away, it's a lot more adventurous. And I think this time around, as I've continued to grow with each project, I've definitely invested more in like mixing and mastering, so the sound quality can get a little bit better with each body of work. And I've heard that this one is definitely, I'm hearing people are enjoying like kind of the top tier production quality on this album.
For sure. I mean, I personally haven't listened through to it. I really enjoyed how, because again, I've read that like your previous work is very much like electronic, like based a lot more. Mm-hmm. But with this, I did get that still, in the sense that I could hear that obviously there was plenty of like electronic instruments and arranging within it, but at the same time there's a lot more of that raw like live instrument sound to it as well. And it was kind of like you kind of got these little electronic motifs, but then also at times almost like kind of like a maybe like 70s soft rock kind of mm-hmm. vibe to some of the songs, like mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it was nice to have an album that isn't like the songs all fit together, but at the same time it's not just 14 songs that are all exactly the same, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's what I've always tried to pride myself on, because I can get very bored when I'm listening to artists that I think what they see as a cohesive album, which obviously has a place of its own in the industry, I think that's fantastic. I just think that all of my favorite artists that I listen to are constantly genre bending throughout their project, and they stick to one message. So it's still a cohesive album in that way, because it's telling a story, but they don't stick to just one sound. And I think I've definitely cultivated that in my own work as well.
And I think you said as well, so is the main message that you're trying to go get through this album is like kind of to do with like relationships and how, what it's like to actually share love with another person?
Yeah. It's like experiencing that level of, it ultimately comes down to self-love for sure, to be able to have the security to give yourself to somebody else in that way, whether it's a platonic, familial, or romantic, I think. And that's what I explored during this period of time. I'm like, I finally feel like I'm secure in my identity. I just think that it's very easy to feel like you're in the best place mentally when you're single, or convince yourself that you're in the best place mentally, because you're not sharing certain intimate aspects of your life with one other person, right? But then when you experience being in a relationship, and for somebody like me that has not been in a relationship before prior to this, it can be very scary to find that the person that you're with is able to harness all of the insecurities you feel about yourself and find a way to accept them in like 5 minutes. Some things that you may have continued to battle for like decades on end, it's hard to wrap your mind around how somebody else was able to love those parts of you that you hate in such a fast manner. And I think it's exploring themes like that, you know, the idea that like love can be so intoxicating, you can go through periods of obsession and withdrawal with it, but ultimately it's finding your own healthy relationship with yourself that is going to actually help to conquer whatever it is that's going on.
I mean, that must be really special as well, to be able to kind of explore what is your first relationship through music as well. Like, so I don't think like necessarily a lot of people do get that opportunity. Like, I think a lot of people, maybe once they're making music of a standard that yours is at, maybe they've like been through a couple of relationships before. So it's really cool, like, to actually hear music that's like of this level of production, like you're saying, but like it's about the first relationship.
Yes, I'm really excited about it.
I found it really cool as well, because obviously one of the singles that you've put out from it before, Limerence, I didn't, like, I'm going to be honest, I didn't know what that word meant. And I looked it up and it's like, oh, wow, it has this whole Wikipedia page that's actually explaining this concept and stuff. And I was like, it must be really cool, as I was saying, to, like, kind of explore that, like, for the first time sort of thing, like, through music as well.
It absolutely was, because up until a few months ago, I mean, I wrote that song back in October. And until, you know, me and my friends were having a conversation about, you know, relationships and falling in love. And I think one of my friends mentioned the fact that this is something Limerence. And I was like, Limerence, like, what is that? That word just sounds so cool. And so I went down my own rabbit hole of, like, researching what this is. And I was, like I said, I was going through falling in love for the first time, and to hear about what Limerence is, this idea of like bringing past baggage from other relationships and projecting it onto the one that you're in, that's crazy, because it's so natural to do that, whether it's a friend, a family member, or somebody that you're falling in love with. And so I think it's important to identify that period of Limerence, and again, the only way to get over it is to find that relationship within yourself, figure out what it is that you are missing from yourself that you're seeking from other people.
And I mean, we've got like some visuals for Limerence as well. Are you planning to put out some more from this project?
Absolutely. I have recorded 5 music videos for this album. So there was one for my first single, So Happy You Knew, that's already out. One for my second single, Limerence, that's already out. And then in the next week or so, I'm going to be putting out the visual for the title track, Mind Altering Substance. And the other two visuals that I've got planned that have already been filmed are My Problem, which is very unique because I think it's like kind of like the summer hit of the album. So I'm kind of waiting until Pride Month, June, July, to be able to like release it. It's getting 3 different versions of a video, which is very exciting to me, because with my prior project, Uglies, I kind of went all in on the visuals for that and created one horizontal video. And I think that's great. It'll stand alone in theory, and I definitely think that video will stand the test of time. But my goal with this project is longevity, and I wanted to cater to what people are consuming digitally right now in media, and that's a lot more vertical content. And so all the videos for this album have been filmed vertically. And so the My Problem video that's getting 3 different versions is 3 different vertical versions, different outfits, different choreography, different sets. It's going to be a lot of fun.
No, that is really cool. And like, obviously, like from like, because I think Uglies was the first the song of yours that I think we were introduced to. And it was really cool to suddenly like, it was very much like straight in, like all this dancing and like visual production and everything. So I think we definitely know that you can bring that, so I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that when My Problem comes out.
Oh yeah,
I mean, on the topic of like Pride Month as well, that was one thing that I noticed, like I liked slipping in to a couple of the songs. It was suddenly very like Vogue style rapping kind of vibe that was there, so it was nice like whenever that kind of came out, sort of thing.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm really glad you noticed that. That's what a lot of my favorite rappers do. I love rappers that don't really take themselves too seriously. And that allows them to like explore places that they would typically be afraid to go, just because they're like, oh, you know, this is not what real rap is. And to this day, I don't consider myself a rapper. I consider myself a singer, period. But I know I'm a singer who can rap. And so when I kind of like throw in a verse, something there, it's usually to change up the production or where I feel the song might be getting monotonous. I think that throwing in a rap in certain places can definitely bring in a whole new dynamic to a song. And there's a song on this album called Never Thought I'd Lose You that is a almost more country pop-esque song in a very conventional like Florida Georgia Line Bebe Rexha kind of way. But the verses are all rap, which is kind of something that's unexpected. And I think people have been kind of thrown for a loop with that one.
100%. Like that was one where like when the guitar like kind of came in at the beginning sort of vibe, I was like, okay, it's going this. And then you start rapping. I was like, oh, okay. I really wasn't expecting like that to be how the song starts. It's just really cool to hear you say that, because obviously that is like literally exactly like not what I got when I was listening to it.
I'm really happy to hear that, because that's, again, it's not something that you would conventionally expect. I am very, very excited that there's a song that exists. And that was, again, there's a few different, like, kind of risk-taking moments, I feel, on this album where it could have absolutely and can still possibly backfire. But, again, I sit in that place of, if I don't try it, I'm never going to know if this is something that could work. And I'm just excited to do that over and over again.
Well, definitely looking forward to seeing the rest of the visuals from the project, and like honestly listening through to it again, because I mean, we get like we play music on the show all the time, and like it's great to always support like South Asian artists and their music, but it's not every time that like I'm listening to an album I'm like, okay, like this is genuinely something that I would maybe listen to outside of this setting. So like, yeah, no, thank you. I'm like looking forward to seeing what you do with it.
Thank you. And I mean, obviously shout out to Mango Masala, because you know, you guys have put me on to so many amazing cool South Asian artists. And I think that you know, I was looking through a few of the different posts that you have up on the Instagram, and I think that a lot of South Asian artists are doing something cool, and you know, paving their own ways in the industry. I think I'm excited to see more of us, you know, kind of taking over into the mainstream. And I would also just love to, you know, I think a lot of us bank on this idea, something that I did too with Uglies, was to kind of like this almost hook and reel kind of marketing perspective, where it's like, you know, as an Indian, you feel almost obliged to pay homage to artists that have come before you and that have taken up that space. And that's what inspired me to do Uglies, is, you know, people see me, they see an Indian man, and they think this is the kind of music that I can create. But in reality, my preference is to do R&B and pop in the same, and take up the same spaces that non-Indian people take up in the mainstream. And so Uglies for me was kind of like bait to kind of grab attention from people who think, okay, this is the one thing that Indian artists can do, and then kind of expose them to like a variety of different kinds of music that I'm capable of creating. And so that's why there is no Uglies on this album. There's a lot more, I play a lot more with my voice and singing, but I'm not trying to dive in too deep into my culture in the very specific kind of way. Instead, I am interested now in placing Indian people in places that we wouldn't conventionally be seen.
No, 100%. And this is like a big thing that we talk about quite a lot of the time, is like we should be seeing South Asian people in the mainstream in certain positions that they're not, but that the fact that they are South Asian shouldn't necessarily be their defining feature. I mean, if that's what they want to do, that's up to them. But like at the end of the day, like people like yourselves, for example, should be able to occupy certain places in the music industry without having to every single song be an Uglies, for example.
Agreed. Like, for example, I mean, it's a little bit of like a teaser, but the My Problem video is based a lot in this idea of what, you know, like an 80s jazzercise aerobics kind of space, like some place that you would expect to see like a John Travolta, Jane Fonda, Jamie Lee Curtis, like these icons that are in like the Hollywood industry. I don't think we really see Indian people taking up space like that. We're not typically cast in videos to do those kinds of dance moves, or shown off as people that, you know, with bodies and ideas that are worth pursuing or seen as conventionally attractive. And so in that video, I was like, yeah, I want a bunch of Indian men and women standing in 80s workout gear, flexing their muscles and doing all these different workouts, because we don't see that. Where is another video where we get to have that? And I think it's simple. It's not as intricate or complex as Uglies was, but sometimes it doesn't need to be. That work almost like stands and has its own message without having to be so on the nose.
Thank you for that spoiler, because I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that now. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me today. It's been a pleasure. For the people at home that maybe don't know where to find you or your music, where's the best place to find you on socials?
So my socials are pretty easy. On Instagram, I am at VJ the Music Man. That's VJDA Music Man. And on TikTok, I am at VJ the Music Man 98. In terms of where you can find my music, it's on any streaming platform under the artist name VJ the Music Man. I think the big ones are Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, Pandora, but you can literally find me anywhere. And my latest album, Mind Altering Substance, is available now to stream and purchase on vinyl.
Oh, vinyl as well. Wow. Okay. I love that. The artwork as well. That was like really cool.
Thank you.
Was there any kind of like thought or meaning behind that?
Oh, absolutely. There was a lot of thought and meaning. My favorite artists, I love when they kind of, what I used to gravitate to in my favorites, I'll give you an example. Like when Rihanna put out her album Talk That Talk, I love the album cover art. And in terms of the song titles, as a new fan that was kind of getting into her, if a song title looked pretty interesting, I was going to click on it. So I was going off of how Rihanna marketed her music to me. What is going to reel me in? So I wanted to do the same with my album cover. I wanted it to be something that's like, oh yeah, if I see that on Spotify, I want to click and see what this artist is doing, you know? Because I think the music industry, frankly, has gotten very lazy. I think we are so used to now just literally taking a selfie, slapping a filter over it, putting the parental advisory in one of the corners, and calling it an album cover. And for me, the thought process behind this project was so intricate, I wanted it to reflect with the album cover. There's a picture in my medical school textbook of the first person that was experiencing tetanus before the vaccine was invented. And they're kind of laid, sprawled back on their hands, fully naked, body just fully horizontal, and like experiencing what a tetanic spasm would look like. I wanted to recreate that, but in a more artistic way. And what the message of the album is, it's the death of the old self and birth of the new self through almost this like drug trip. And the overall drug we're exploring on this album is psychedelics, specifically mushrooms. And so I wanted to almost be like, this old version of me is on the ground, new version sprouting out from the ground like a mushroom, with a little bit of light shining from the side onto my heart to show the whole love is like a drug concept. And so that's what the thought process was behind that album cover.
Now, honestly, like when you've explained that now, it makes so much like sense. Like, I think that is like you say, it's really cool to like see that on Spotify, be like, oh, that's really interesting. And then to like hear the story behind it as well, and it all come together. And I think you're right as well. Like, I think in the streaming age, it's becoming ever more it's becoming a common occurrence for people to not really care about their artwork, and it just be like even just like a color and like text and stuff like that, which like I say, if that's what an artist wants to do, great. But at the same time, like it's not even from the perspective of staying true to the artist self, but also like you were saying, it's actually in their favor when there's so much on Spotify to actually have something that stands out and actually does like draw people in as well.
Agreed. I couldn't agree more. Absolutely.